their argument now in the case of Hudson against Chicago.
Good morning, Your Honor. Joseph Ryan on behalf of the...
Please, wait till your call.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Roddy.
Good morning. Joseph Roddy on behalf of Mr. Hudson and Payment. Both of these gentlemen agree with two of the three conclusions by the trial court. One, that there was a substantial property interest here in their job, namely the Chicago police officers. Two, that they were deprived of the job. And the issue before this court is, where we part company, is what kind of process was due these two officers before they lost their property interest in their job. When you look at the balancing of the equities here, we have a property interest versus a governmental interest, which I think pales in comparison here, because there is an automatic firing, according to the city, when the officer is not present for 4 days. Clearly, the record shows that they do not get an opportunity to be heard beforehand, which is almost in contradistinction to all the rules and regulations of the police department. Even if a person is indicted in this court or charged with murder, he at least is brought down and given an opportunity and a minimal notice to explain, well, are you innocent or guilty? Here, there was not even that present. It operates automatically. It says at the end of 4 days, if you are absent without permission, you are automatically separated from your job. I think the holding in Laudermill even indicates, contrary to the city, that an ex parte investigation, although it is minimal, and I agree that the city can just say, well, Officer A hasn't been here for 4 days, therefore he should be terminated, even though that's minimal, that investigation, and there's probably less room for error, still, I think the Laudermill holding holds that the ex parte investigation is not sufficient. Laudermill never does away with at least some preliminary chance to say, no, I didn't do it, or I have some basic excuse. But here what we have, gentlemen, is 4 days, and ipso facto, you lose your job. The trial court says that you have a notice here of the violation of the AWOP policy, meaning you will lose your job, and I agree. But you also have a notice that you can't commit a crime, and you also have a notice that you can't be the citizen, yet in those latter two instances, the department and the city gives the individual officer an opportunity to at least say, no, I didn't do it, or there was some mitigating circumstance.
Why, Mr. Roddy, why didn't you bring this suit in state court and make there the argument that this rule is substantively invalid? That appears to be the bottom line that you're arguing, that the rule is substantively wrong.
But it... Well, one, Judge, the timing, we were too late when we discovered it through the client. Two, I think...
It's not clear that that makes you better off in federal court.
Okay. But two, I think it's how the rule operates that does deprive someone of a constitutional right to due process. So the rule itself is improper, but how it operates...
But federal court won't review the validity of the rule. But all your problems seem to have to do with the substance of the rule. Since your clients conceitedly were absent without permission for more than 4 consecutive days apiece.
Correct.
There's really nothing in this case except the validity of the rule,
which
is not a question of federal law.
I think what we do have involved, Judge, with all due respect, is how that rule operates. And if it takes away a property right without due process, I think this court does have jurisdiction to look at it. And it is an appropriate forum for this court to operate. And that's what this rule does here, is it strips the officer of his property right without any kind of process. The answer by the trial court and the city that arbitration is enough, but we part company there because, one, the state statute gives the right to a police board hearing, and two, when you look at the arbitration agreement itself, Judge, you will find that it is somewhat illusory because it says you cannot challenge and go to arbitration for a separation. But the city says, well, this is not a separation, this is AWOP, it's a separate line item. But the end result is the same. The officer loses his job without any kind of opportunity. Two, even if you go one step further, the arbitration agreement does not allow you to go to mediation without the union support. And in this case, the record is absolutely clear that the union would not give the support, would not even file the mediation. The answer in Butita, I think that this court said that the arbitration was sufficient. I think there's a grave difference here between this court's decision in Butita and here. In Butita, the officer did not lose a substantial property right. What he lost was the right to come back to the job, but he did not lose the fact that he had a job. The court here said he could stay on his disability, he just could not come back to the job, but he never lost his opportunity to have the job in the future. In this case, we have lost it totally. So I think the statute as it does exist does deprive the officers, because arbitration is not the solution in this case. We cannot go to arbitration. And to claim, as the city does, well, we could file a lawsuit against the union for unfair labor practices, that doesn't get us our jobs back. That doesn't solve the issue. So with all due respect to the city, I think the issue as it now exists, the contract as it now exists, does deprive the officers of basic property rights without sufficient due process. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Rowdy. Ms. Layton.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Your Honor, the thrust of the plaintiff's claims has been that they were improperly terminated when, in fact, they were not subject to the absent without permission policy. But this argument is wholly irrelevant to the claim that they brought, which is a due process claim. The constitutional question that's relevant here is whether they received an adequate notice and opportunity to tell their side of the story prior to their deprivation, and whether they had access to a constitutionally sufficient forum to challenge their terminations afterwards. Both plaintiffs did so in this case. This morning, I'd like to address the adequacy of both the pre- and post-deprivation procedures the plaintiff had access to. With respect to pre-deprivation procedures, the case law is clear that elaborate hearing is not required. The Loudermill case stands for the proposition all that's required are notice that an officer is facing termination and an opportunity to tell his side of the story prior to the termination taking effect. Both Hudson and Kamen had that opportunity in this case. In Hudson's case, he was sent a letter informing him he was facing termination. He then contacted a sergeant in the personnel department, Sergeant Ganny, and explained that he felt a mistake had been made. After that, Sergeant Ganny suggested he contact his commanding officer, which he did. He contacted Commander Griffin. He had a face-to-face meeting with Commander Griffin in which he explained why he felt a mistake had been made. Commander Griffin suggested he put it in writing, which he did. He submitted a memorandum explaining why he felt he was not absent without permission. And then he was sent a letter informing him he could submit additional information if he so chose, which he did not do. All of this happened prior to Hudson losing any pay that he would have been entitled to. Therefore, he had, prior to the effectiveness of his termination, an opportunity to tell his side of the story. While ultimately he might not agree with the results, he can't deny that he had that chance to explain his position. And the Constitution did not require the Chicago Police Department to agree with his position or to take action based on what he said. The Constitution only required that the Chicago Police Department listen to what he said, which they did. And in Payman's case, when he returned from his vacation, he too met with his captain, Captain Roy, in a face-to-face meeting, and he even admits he was told that he was facing termination during this meeting, and he was given an opportunity to explain where he'd been and why he'd been away. After which, the personnel department of the Chicago Police Department mailed him a termination letter affecting his termination. So both plaintiffs had what the Constitution requires, and although they disagree with the outcome, the Constitution is not a guarantee against mistaken personnel decisions.
I gather there is no particularly standard operating procedure on pre-deprivation procedure, though. It's up to the individual commanders or how they handle it.
The policy itself does not set forth the steps that I just outlined. The policy itself simply says that when an officer is determined to be absent without permission by his unit, they have to fill out the appropriate paperwork and forward it to the personnel department. And then the personnel department will make sure that the paperwork is filled out properly and contact the unit to verify that the officer is, in fact, absent without permission. This serves as a check against an erroneous deprivation, and whether or not the officer was or was not present and whether or not he did or did not call in are straightforward objective facts that can be verified by the procedure that the police department has in place. So both Hudson and Payman had access to adequate pre-deprivation process. As far as post-deprivation process, this court has held at least three times in Wallace and Winston and Utita that access to a grievance process under a collective bargaining agreement is constitutionally sufficient post-deprivation process. And the plaintiffs don't take issue with the particulars of the grievance process that is available under the CBA. They claim instead that they didn't have access to that grievance process, and they rely on the fact that their union would not take their claim for them. But in response to...
If the grievance had been taken by the union, it could have resulted in reinstatement?
Yes, Your Honor. It could have resulted in reinstatement and with full back pay and seniority. They could have been made whole. The plaintiffs had the burden in response to the city's summary judgment motion to come forward with evidence that they did not have access to the grievance process under the collective bargaining agreement. The only evidence they've come forward with is evidence that their union would not take their case. But that's not the same as showing that the Chicago Police Department would not allow them to file a grievance. It is the position of my client that the Chicago Police Department will allow grievances for absent without permission cases. Now, if the union made the determination that their cases lacked merit and decided not to pursue them, that was the union's prerogative. And as this court recognized in Winston versus United States Postal Service, their remedy, if the union made that decision in error, was against the union itself for breach of their duty of fair representation. But that is not the same as saying that the Chicago Police Department will not permit them access to a forum, a constitutionally adequate forum, in which to contest their termination. The grievance process was that constitutionally adequate forum, and they had the obligation of proving or providing evidence to show that they didn't have access to it. They failed to do so in this case, and therefore they can't meet their burden of showing that they didn't have access to proper process under the Constitution. So ultimately, because the plaintiffs had access to adequate notice and an opportunity to tell their side of the story beforehand, and because they had access to a constitutionally sufficient grievance process to challenge their determinations afterwards, they received all the process they were due under the Constitution. And unless there are further questions, we would ask this court to affirm the judgment of the district court. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Layton. Anything further, Mr. Roddy?
One, the termination is automatic. It's done just unilaterally by the department. If the officer's missing for 4 days, they don't bring the officer in and ask him if he was fishing in an ambulance or anything else. And the record is bereft of anything to the contrary. Two, I think the Winston reliance is a little bit misplaced because in Winston, the individual postal people did not have any other rights other than through their union contract. And in fact, the court specifically noted that they were non-preferential employees. If they were preferential employees in Winston, they would have had the right, as we claim here, they should have had before the police board. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.